You can go ahead and, yeah.
Calling case A24-0479, Salguero versus Hernandez.
All right. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Each side will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please state your name and who you represent before you start your argument. The podium will adjust up and down. There's buttons sort of right below in the center of the podium if you want to adjust it. And then appellant, when you're ready, you may get situated and proceed.
Thank you. Samuel Dilley, attorney on behalf of appellant. May it please the court, opposing counsel, this case is a tragedy. A young, hardworking, intelligent individual died, Mario. Mario died while on the job. Mario's family received $60,000 in workers' compensation benefits for his death. Mario died because his coworker ran him over with a trailer connected to a truck. Mario died out of the use of a motor vehicle. The district court determined that Mario's family cannot proceed with a wrongful death action against respondents because they have not established that respondent Hernandez owed Mario a personal duty because the incident occurred while respondent Hernandez was in the course and scope of his employment. This is a complete unjust result for Mario and his family. Two chapters of the Minnesota legislature applies to Mario's family's cause of action, the No Fault Act and the Workers' Compensation Act. Neither of these acts trump the other.
Can I ask you about that?
Yes, sir.
When was the first time the term Workers' Compensation Act became a matter discussed in the litigation?
That was in the complaint, Your Honor.
So, I'm sorry, a no-fault act.
It was never distinguishedly stated in the complaint.
When was the first time it came up?
I would say that would be in the probably response to the summary judgment motion by plaintiff, by myself.
And it was a curious response. Your brief explains it in this way, and help me to get over my concern about it, that, well, automobile, the fact that there was an incident involving a death and an automobile somehow should have put the defendant on notice that this was going to be a no-fault action. What is the most convincing supportive case law that you were able to find to support that proposition?
I guess, Your Honor, our claims don't stem exactly from the no-fault case. We're not asking for no-fault benefits related to medical or
I understand that, but just as a general sense, before you get into the substance, what is the case law that supports the proposition that you make in your brief that by making reference to a death involving a person and a vehicle, that's sufficient to put the defense on notice that there's a no-fault basis for the claim?
I don't know of any case law directly on point. I guess in my complaint I also put in there that this arose out of a motor vehicle, that there was... I didn't expressly put that the tort thresholds were met, but I implied them in our request for damages. So I would say the statute of 65B, where it lays out the tort thresholds, I believe that would be sufficient to put them on notice that at least the No-Fault Act applies to this case.
So one other question I had about your brief in particular that I was curious about, and I assume this wasn't in jest, but I was taken aback by it, and I'll just quote to you from page 16 of your brief. Second, it is clearly outside the course and scope of respondent Hernandez's employment to run over a coworker or anyone else with his truck. I gather what your argument is that if that had been in his job duty description, to run over a coworker, that and that alone would bring this case sufficiently eligible for summary judgment under the Workers' Compensation Act.
Right.
C- Can you think of a type of employment with that kind of a job description that your duty includes to cause death or serious bodily injury to your coworker?
No, Your Honor.
So there is no, there, if I understand your argument then correctly, the end of it would mean that under no circumstances would the Workers' Compensation Act preclude summary judgment.
I don't agree with that. I think in the context of motor vehicle accidents.
Yes, in the context of motor vehicle accidents.
I do think that there should not be a summary judgment. I think.
No, I understand that you think there should not be. Mm-hmm. I just want to understand your argument that because there wasn't in the job description running over a coworker, that, and you've acknowledged that wouldn't be in any job description for any job other than perhaps hitman, which that the Workers' Compensation Act would never end in summary, would never cause a summary judgment dismissal of a case.
I think in the context of any motor vehicle accident, that would be accurate.
Workers' compensation law is not uniform nationwide, but it's but there are significant overlaps throughout the country. Were you able to find any case in Minnesota or anywhere in the United States that would support that proposition?
No.
Okay.
So as I was saying, in the No-Fault Act and the Workers' Compensation Act, these cases hold equal weight in the law. The No-Fault Act, it places limitations on who can bring a claim against a tortfeasor. It does that by limiting general damages to those that meet the tort threshold.
Did you say you cited the tort threshold statute in your complaint?
I did not cite the statute, no.
Okay. So you didn't plead anything as to the tort thresholds in the complaint, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, I thought that was your explanation as to why you didn't need to specify the
I didn't explicitly put those exact tort thresholds, but in my last paragraph when I'm asking for damages, I put in there that this has caused death, which is one of the tort thresholds, has suffered and will suffer pain and suffering, and has suffered and will or has suffered an economic loss.
So why cause death means there's a tort threshold? Help me to understand. What's your point?
Yep, so one of the thresholds in the No-Fault Act to bring a claim against a tortfeasor is an injury or death.
Okay.
But why, how does that put them on notice that no fault is being specifically pled in your complaint?
Arranging that this motor vehicle caused death, which is one of the thresholds, in addition to the other allegations in my complaint of the car accident being a direct cause, the car accident causing these injuries, the death of Mario.
But a vehicle accident within the scope of employment can also be a workers' comp claim, right?
Correct, yep.
And there's cases on that. So then under your theory, just pleading workers' comp, every vehicle accident that happens on the employer's property would constitute also a no-fault.
That's correct, because it's my understanding that the No-Fault Act says that all claims arising out of the maintenance or use of a motor vehicle, this statute applies.
But don't you have to cite somewhere in the complaint to let the other side have notice that it's both? Because at least reading your complaint on the gross negligence, that all applies to the co-employee theory under workers' comp, and there's a workers' comp thing cited here, but there's nothing else about no-fault in the complaint.
Well, again, it's our position that we're not actually bringing a no-fault claim for those medical benefits or the wage loss benefits or death benefits. What we're bringing is that common law claim of motor vehicles that is now, the legislature has now created a statutory scheme to kind of regulate and legislate car accidents.
So if the legislature has created this statutory scheme and there are multiple workers' comp cases that involve automobile injuries, why is this one the first case that I'm aware of where there's a discussion of no fault in the context of the Workers' Compensation Act?
Well, I couldn't find any precedential case law on this exact scenario. The overarching prominent case is the Stringer v. Minnesota Vikings Football Club.
What were the unpublished cases that you were able to find where theory existed?
So there's not one that I could find that this theory existed. In those unpublished cases, it was Otto v. Christensen. I believe there's one that actually came out just yesterday. Langley v. Thomas, I believe, something along those lines, where the Court of Appeals did submit the unpublished case stating that the work or the Stringer test does apply to car accident cases.
Well, I'm not talking about the Stringer test. I'm talking about this overlap between No Fault Act and workers' compensation.
Right. I could not find a case on it, Your Honor.
On the Otto case, how do you distinguish that case beyond the fact that it's non-precedential?
Well, for starters, I think one in Otto, I mean, that was their job was to drive the ambulance, so I think that's a distinction. Other than that, I do think they have similar facts that this was a great bodily harm. There's a car accident. So I do think they are similar, but again, it is unprecedented. I don't know, again, as Judge Ross was alluding to, that I don't know if they made this argument that the No-Fault Act is applicable and that the tort thresholds need to apply. I also think in Otto v.
Wouldn't that strike you as strange that you're the first lawyer who's made the argument? If it's embedded so much so in the law that you don't even need to mention it?
Potentially, yes. I also think for Otto v. Christensen, there's two summary judgment motions. The first summary judgment motion, the judge decided that the employee was, in fact, in the course and scope of the employment. That was never appealed. The judge then relied on the second summary judgment to use their first decision, and then it was appealed. And I believe the Court of Appeals said that it was already decided and that appeal was not before them. So this is the first time the summary judgment's before this court, so I also think that it is a distinction.
Can you address the issue of gross negligence?
Yep. So for gross negligence, it has not been defined as what constitute work in the work comp court. In the dissent in the Stringer v. Vikings, the justice said that gross negligence has been previously defined in other cases as negligence of a high degree, great negligence, more than ordinary negligence, but less than one, and willful conduct. So it's our position that the plaintiff, when they're bringing this case, it falls under the No-Fault Act and the Workers' Compensation Act. So No-Fault Act, that creates the threshold that they need to prove in order to sustain a claim for damages. That's one of the four thresholds. Again, that's for a jury to find whether or not a tort threshold is met. And same with gross negligence. That's where the workers' compensation aspect comes into play, that there's the co-employee immunity. And in order to get over that, there's a gross negligence. We need to prove gross negligence, which is beyond the ordinary negligence. So it's our position that Mario's family should be able to move forward to a jury and allow the jury to decide whether or not a tort threshold is met and then whether or not Respondent Hernandez's actions were grossly negligent.
What is there in the facts that would put the district court in a position to say this is a there's a real factual dispute about gross negligence?
So Mario, he was wearing a safety vest. I believe it was a yellow. Respondent Hernandez said that he couldn't see them in his mirror. He couldn't see him when he was surrounding. There's also the fact that
Well, if he couldn't see him, why does it matter that he was wearing a yellow vest?
Well, I think a jury could find that if someone's wearing a yellow vest, that he wasn't paying attention enough to not be able to see him. I think a jury could find that was grossly negligent. There's also the fact that there's a dispute on whether or not the owner of JC Fence asked him to move the truck at that time. There's a dispute about whether or not the mirrors could see.
I saw that factual dispute. Why would whether the supervisor asked him to move the truck or he moved it on his own, how does that affect the gross negligence analysis?
It's my belief that a jury could find that if somebody moves the truck without anyone telling them and just does it on their own, that they could find that would be gross negligence.
Why?
Because they were off. They were not on the roadway. He had known that they were working under the truck. And if, you know, someone doesn't give you the all clear, says go ahead, then it could be construed as gross negligence to move your truck forward. I'll wrap this up by saying that the legislature has really created this entire no-fault act to really legislate these common law claims of car accidents. That's not seen in any other cases. In Stringer v. Minnesota Vikings Club, Dolly v. Thiessen's, Wicken v. Morris, those are all general claims of negligence where the court has found that this personal duty requirement is met. In car accidents, those are inherently different. Everybody has a personal duty when they get behind the wheel to drive safe, be aware of their surroundings, stop, yield, etc. As such, we do submit that the personal duty requirement is fulfilled in these car accident cases, and we ask that this court reverse and remand the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondents, counsel, when you're ready, get situated. You have 15 minutes for your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Matt Johnson for defendants J.C. Fence and Elvis Perez Hernandez. And we're here today because of a workplace injury that occurred. This is an error-correcting court, and so the question here is, based on the undisputed facts in this case, did the district court properly apply the law and grant summary judgment in favor of defendants? And it's respondents' position that they did here. This is a case where the trustee and the family, their exclusive remedy here is the Workers' Compensation Act, and that's what it's in place for when there's a workplace injury.
What if there's gross negligence? Would that be the same?
Excuse me?
What if there's gross negligence? Would that necessarily be the same result?
If a personal duty can be established, and we'll get into that in a little bit, there may be a gross negligence claim against a co-employee. That's what the statute is there for. But there are standards set forth in Strigger that talk about how do you get to that level. And number one, there needs to be a personal duty.
If we were to determine that there was a personal duty, assume for the sake of this question that we were to reach that conclusion against you, against your client, is there enough in the facts to submit the question of gross negligence to a jury?
I don't believe so. And the court didn't, the district court didn't make a determination based on that, but we certainly argued it. And we would argue there's not enough facts to support it here.
So it's pretty clear, as I understand the facts and the way the district court described it, that those workers on the scene were aware that someone had crawled under the truck to figure out what had been dislodged with it from the striking the bar that was extending up from the ground. Why wouldn't it be gross negligence, or at least a question of fact as to gross negligence, as to whether if the driver was not informed that, okay, there's now no longer anyone under the truck, now you can proceed?
And actually, the undisputed facts here are that the person, the decedent, came back from underneath, and they were all standing with him. And then the owner of the business walked away. Mr. Hernandez got back in the truck. He didn't know that the decedent went back under. So it's not a situation where decedent was still underneath the truck and he decided I'm going to get in it and move it anyways, or was some kind of misunderstanding of whether or not he had gotten back out from underneath the truck.
In the series of events that you just described are entirely undisputed?
Correct.
But, isn't that kind of a classic fact question for a jury there? He didn't know. What should he have done to make sure that, he knew that the decedent had been under the truck just moments earlier, and he knew that everyone was working on this problem, and then he got in the truck, and, it seems to me that this is not your strongest argument, that there isn't a fact question here on gross negligence. Wouldn't you agree?
Respondent, of course, would argue that there's not enough there, but it would have to go back to the district court, I guess, for a judge to make a determination if there's enough to move on. But we never get there because personal duty hasn't been established in this case.
If I understand your concession correctly, you're acknowledging that if we were to determine that there was a duty, a personal duty, that at the very least, the district court would have to we have to remand to the district court to make that determination about whether gross negligence, there's enough facts to establish gross negligence for a jury.
I believe so. Yeah, and that's. And once again, personal duty is not met here. And in this case, what the plaintiff is asking for is to ignore what's already in place under Stringer, under Dowley and Wicken, about the requirement that the acts of the co-employee need to be outside the course and scope of their job, because it's a motor vehicle accident.
Can you address the argument that because running over a coworker was not in the job description, it's therefore outside the scope of employment to drive over a coworker?
Yeah, and the Stringer case talks about that. It's not that the injury resulted from the job. It's the incident causing the injury arose out of the job, and there's a distinction there. You know, as we talked about it, it's probably ridiculous to think that anyone's job description would be to run someone over, okay? That's not the standard. That's not the measuring stick. It's the incident causing the injury. Was that course and scope? Here it is, undisputed. And the court found that that's the case.
Is it within the course and scope of the employment for these workers to fix a truck?
Certainly. Yeah, this person's job duties involved maintaining that truck, driving that truck, same truck every day for 2 years. He had been a driver for the company for 11 years. Oftentimes over that time period, including with that truck, he would be hauling the trailer, moving the trailer. That's what they need to do when they're at this work site here, and it's talked about in the depositions. I mean, you're in a big empty cul-de-sac at the time. And so you got to move the trailer from one spot to the other. And that's what they're doing when it originally got lodged on the stake in the ground underneath.
But it's a fence building company.
Correct.
I mean, it's fundamentally not a transportation of fence materials company. It's not a transportation of injured persons like an auto, like an ambulance company, you know? So, you know, presumably, you know, the duties of the driver, you know, once the job site was established and material was there, were to build fences. That was the primary duties for the driver.
And moving the materials to do that. And the trailer contains the materials to do that job. That includes him getting it to the job site with the trailer, driving it there, and then moving it in and around the job site so that they can perform the work easier. And that's what he was doing at the time.
Is it part of the decedent's duty? Like, is that part of the decedent's job to fix a truck?
You know, I guess we didn't really get into his duties. Certainly his duties are there as an employee of the company involved in building fences. And in furtherance of that, if his employer tells him to go find these cables underneath, which he did, they're at the employer's direction, you know, I guess that was part of his duties. Wasn't a prohibited act.
Are the decedent's job duties part of the analysis for the to liability?
Well, certainly from the standpoint of he did collect workers' compensation benefits, and that was undisputed, that this gentleman, unfortunately, who passed away, was in the course and scope of his job. There was no dispute about that. Work comp benefits were pursued. It was the exclusive remedy. It was the only remedy that the heirs and next of kin of this gentleman had to pursue.
But you're not arguing that every time a person collects workers' compensation benefits, that means that the co-employee was also acting in the course and scope of employment, because that position would swallow the exception, right?
So there could be instances I would think where that could occur, but that's where you have the standard. You have to determine, was there a personal duty or not? Did that person act outside the course and scope? You could be on the job and I can't control what someone might do to me in a workplace, okay? But I'm on the job and I'm injured. That co-employee did something that was outside the course and scope to cause my injury. Well, you could still collect work comp in that scenario and then pursue the gross negligence claim or intentional claim, because the statute talks about that too, which is really in part the basis of the statute in the first place back in 1979, was they were trying to deal with instances where people are intentionally injured in the workplace. Get punched in the face by a coworker, that sort of thing. That would be an example, and that's why they have the gross negligence in there also. So it's a higher form of negligence.
But there's no bright line rule in the case law that, and you aren't asking us to establish one, I take it, that just because the decedent was in the course and scope of employment and entitled to workers' compensation benefits, therefore their co-employee who caused the injury was also in the course and scope of employment, and the exception doesn't apply. You're not asking us to make that ruling, and there's no basis in the case law that you're aware of?
No, there's not. But there, in any case, there's going to be an analysis of whether that co-employee was in the course and scope. And here we have that in this case.
You were just answering Judge Schmidt's question,
yes.
I think, that when you were saying that the decedent was acting within the course and scope of his employment, you were saying he received workers' comp, therefore he must have been within the scope of his employment. You weren't asserting that as a basis for liability.
No, it's just a fact in this case, and you've got to evaluate what facts are in front of you or what facts the court's looked at, and that's just one of them. I mean, the gentleman was in the course and scope. They all were. Everybody at that job site was.
Are you aware of any case where workers' comp and no fault were both applied?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. And one of the things I wanted to point out here, too, is, you know, there seems to be a discussion here about there's a work comp statute and there's a no-fault statute, and those two need to work together. And in fact, they do. I think the legislature has analyzed that. The legislature has put a provision in the No-Fault Act that talks about priority of benefits between the two. So a person can collect no-fault benefits and work comp benefits. Their priorities in place, 65B61. And in fact, I think in appellant's reply brief, they cite the, is it Kleinmeister case, I think it is. And that was just a case where a person collected both. I mean, they started out collecting work comp benefits. I think they switched doctors without approval from comp, and comp cut them off. And then they turned around and they sought no-fault benefits, and they had an arbitration hearing. And then there were some issues of over collateral estoppel, res judicata. But point being is, yeah, there are scenarios where someone can collect no-fault benefits and work comp benefits. This is not a case about no-fault benefits. Frankly, that's a bit of a red herring. It's not a claim for no-fault benefits. It's a wrongful death action that we're involved in here. As to vicarious liability as well, once again, the exclusive remedies of the Work Comp Act preclude any claim against the employer brought by an employee injured in the workplace. You can't sue your employer beyond the recovery of work comp benefits. Even if it's a claim brought for vicarious liability, and that's the Lange case we cited in our brief, I think. And really, if we are to find that there's a personal duty in every motor vehicle accident involving employees going from place to place, it's going to, I mean, in a lot of ways, really eviscerate the purpose and intent of the Workers' Compensation Act and the balancing act the legislature put in place. You know, on one hand, a person...
It's a bit of a straw man. I don't think what's being asked in this case is that any time an employee driver is going from one place to the other, that there's liability beyond workers' compensation. I think we're limited to the facts of this case, which involves a peculiar circumstance of an employee crawling under a truck in the middle of the movement of a vehicle because of some collision with the stake.
No, what's being asked is that the personal duty requirement under Stringer be an automatic because it's a motor vehicle. It involves a motor vehicle. That's what's being asked here, regardless of the analysis of course and scope. That's what's being asked for here. And that would apply across the board, assuming there's enough facts present to get to a jury on gross negligence. Okay? Because you'd just be throwing out the personal duty requirement that's in Stringer. And in those cases, Dowley and Wicken, you know, it talks about the court in all those cases really considered the balancing act and the whole purpose here of the Workers' Compensation Act. So I will I'll wrap up there unless you have any further questions for me.
I don't see any questions from the panel. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you. So I'd just like to address a couple of respondents' arguments. So first of all, as far as the personal duty in this case, I think we can reach it in two ways. So I think A, as my brief lays out for the Stringer case, that this is outside the scope and course, if the court follows that. I also think, too, that the motor vehicles are inherently different than any other workplace accident. And so the fact that the legislature, again, has created this no-fault act to help legislate and regulate car accidents and car accident victims.
What's your response to the idea that this is an end run around the personal duty requirement? That your position is an end run?
It would
basically every workplace accident involving a motor vehicle would result in, you know, a co-employee exception applying.
Well, I think there's two things that would hamper that. So number one, there's still the gross negligence. You still have to prove that what the coworker did was grossly negligent. And two, again, the No-Fault Act, that creates limitations on who can bring car accident claims and who can bring a claim against a tortfeasor, and that's still applicable to this case. So you still have to prove one of the tort thresholds if you're going to bring this case against your coworker. So I think those two aspects of it help limit any concerns of judicial expedience or any of those fronts.
And I want to make sure I'm clear on this. So so you are arguing the personal duty is met because of the existence of the No-Fault Act?
Not necessarily because of the No-Fault Act, but because of being in a car accident, being in a motor vehicle, and the personal duty that any driver owes to any person while they're behind the wheel of a vehicle.
So with that, we can get there by saying, all right, we don't have to worry about Stringer and the two elements there. We can say personal duty is met because this involved a car accident and no fault exists.
I believe so, yes. In the Stringer case, excuse me one moment. On the very first page, that the court discussed that to make this determination, we must address the interaction between common law tort liability and the workers' compensation system. The legislature has gone above and beyond that for car accident cases. They've legislated it. They've created these tort thresholds. They've created deductions so you can't double recover. And for other general negligence claims, they have not done that, which I think is what distinguishes a car accident case in the context of Stringer. I also think even under the context of Stringer that this was outside the course and scope of employment, and so it would also meet the personal duty under Stringer.
Understood.
Assume we disagree with your interweaving of the No-Fault Act into this action. On what basis would we reverse the district court?
Well, this case is reviewed de novo, so I would say on the basis that the Stringer case would apply then in this case, and that this action fell outside the course and scope of respondent Hernandez's employment.
And the reason for that is what you mentioned earlier and in your brief, that because the job description didn't include running over someone.
I think beyond that, too, that this is a fence-building company. There's also testimony that they did hire somebody else to repair vehicles, that, again, they were outside. I mean, they were driving on a plot of land that was undeveloped.
There's no dispute, is there, in the record as to whether the driver's duties included driving a truck, repairing a truck, and moving the truck about on the work site to move the equipment and materials from place to place?
I don't think there's a dispute about whether or not he drove the truck. I think repairs, there is a dispute, as the owner, Mr. Constana, did say that they hired somebody for any repairs. So I do think there's a dispute in that aspect. So again, just to wrap up, based on the plain reading of the No Fault Act and the Work Comp Act, Mario's family should be able to move forward with this case. They should be able to go in front of a jury to prove two things. Number one, that Mario's injuries met one of the tort thresholds, and number two, that Respondent Hernandez's acts and or omissions were grossly negligent. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today. We will issue a decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you. All right, we have one more case for argument today.